Accession number 31430, Mr. Leslie Higgins, Reel 4. Now, we're just talking about your time with the Essex Regiment depot at Worley Barracks, and we're going through a typical day. We had a bit of a diversion for inspections, but we've done your... After you had your breakfast and you've tidied your room and squared your room away, now what would happen after that? What training sessions might you have in the morning?
If you were doing physical training, you'd obviously be dressed in your denims for normal day training. You'd be given 2 minutes to change out of your denims and boots into a PT kit, and you'd have to be outside in 2 minutes ready for the corporal to take you on to wherever. And that's what you were given. Then you were taken over to the gymnasium and you were given an hour, maybe hour and a half, physical training, all exercises.
Now, what kind of exercises? Was this the old Swedish exercises, you know, the old gym,
jumping
traditional?
On the spot, your arms up and down and legs astride, kneeling down, standing up, laying on your back, raising your legs. The general, what we could probably call now, loosening up, you know, the loosening up side of things. Sometimes you'd have a, what they call a windmill, which was a boxing ring, and you were, you'd say, like, you and you, and you both go in the ring and you knock 7 bells out of each other.
Now, was this what they call milling, or was that different? Because milling's where you're not allowed to defend yourself, I suppose.
No, you do. This was the, we called it the windmill.
So it's boxing.
You just went in and slugged each other.
Oh, no, that is milling then. So you're just hitting.
Yeah.
Not defending.
No proper boxing. You both had to hit each other.
And what did you think of milling?
Painful. Painful.
Did you see any point to it at the time, or even now, really?
Well, I suppose now when you look back, it did help you to, apart from keeping fit, it taught you to, if you were getting a knockabout, then not to back up, but to go forward. You know, it was a sort of a transgression of fixed bayonets and charge, I suppose.
So it's milling. A bit of PT. What about cross-country work?
Well, you did, with the physical training side, if you want to keep with that for a moment.
Yeah, all of it, yeah.
You would, after you'd been there for a few weeks, you got what they called a 4 mile or a 5 mile stomp or something like that it was called. And you did it in physical training gear. Then...
Is this a march or a run?
Run. After that, a couple of weeks or a week, you would do it in your denims and light bullet pouches and belt and your beret. And then the one after that you would do with a battle dress. And at the end of that you do it with full battle of war marching order, carrying everything. Bashes, they called them.
And still running?
Yeah, 5 mile bash. I survived, some others didn't, they fell by the wayside. But once you've got to that stage, when you first thought the first 4 mile bash, you're like, oh, blimey, I'm never going to get round. But surprisingly enough, you do. But when you get to the full battle order one, half of you would say, I can do this, I've been there, I've done that. And you did do it. Because, you know, further on down the line, you were required to run with brain guns and machine gun stuff on you and mortars and grenades and all the rest of it, you know. That was part of your ongoing heavy carrying training, you know.
What about assault courses? Did you have any PT training on that?
Again, you did it with your PT kit on, and then gradually as you progressed, you wore more uniform.
And what were the assault courses like?
Wicked.
In what way?
You'd never seen them before. No one had ever seen an assault course. Jumping across string things hanging on trees or swinging across ropes and going across ponds of water that's 15 degrees below freezing, you know, because this was in December, January, February, you know. Being up high, some people didn't like going up the tree and going across two strings, you know, anticipating they were going to fall. But eventually...
How were you with that?
I was all right doing those things there. Anything outside, I was fine with.
Did the PT make you fitter? I mean, because you were a swimmer, well, you
yeah,
must have been fairly swimming.
I was
fit anyway.
Quite fit anyway, you know. I didn't find it any pressure, I don't think.
But did it improve your overall level, do you think? At the end of it, were you better?
Well, yeah,
were you fitter
yeah,
than you were
yeah,
at the start?
I only weighed 10 stone 5 then.
So that's PT. Now, what about other training sessions you might have in the day? One's drill. Now, you'd already done a lot of drill. Was that a big advantage to you?
For me, yeah, because I knew what the orders were. What, you know, what to expect, what to be expected to do.
And was it any different from what it had been in the Army Cadets, the drill?
A little bit. The verbal instructions were harsher, obviously, coming from regular soldiers.
In what way?
They were abrasive.
Did they swear a lot?
No, funny enough, I said to my wife the other day, I said, you know, when we were in the Army, we never saw. You never heard a sergeant or a corporal call another rank a bad name. You might say, oh, come on, you prat, you know, you fool, or Dumbo or something like that, but you never heard them call like now. I mean, children, 11-year-old, call their dads enormous swear words now and think it's a joke.
So it was just casual abuse rather than that,
yeah,
swearing.
Yeah, it wasn't, you know, just strange things.
Were you enjoying the drill by then?
I liked it because I've been aware. Everything that came, I touched on before.
Now tell me about the weapons training, because here you'd meet weapons you hadn't.
Well, the Bren gun we met.
Now what do you think of the Bren gun?
Beautiful.
Now a lot of people say that. What was so good about it?
Because of its, you couldn't feel the recoil on it. And if you had a target and you were aiming on target, it was very, very difficult to come off of target unless you were being silly, you know. But when it fired, it just rocked. Da, 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 da. Beautiful.
And what about, did you learn all the stripping there? Because
yeah.
Stripping it down and things.
Stripping down, yeah.
I mean, did you really do it blindfold and things like that?
Yeah,
or?
Did it absolutely blindfolded. Until the, because when we were doing our own, in our own training, the NCOs used to come along and there was a pin in it. It was a male and a female part, and it was all to do with the way the back end of the gun, the butt and the trigger part joined onto the barrel. And if you left that out, the first time you squeezed the trigger, the barrel used to jump off. And they used to, when you got blindfolded, they'd just come along and pick it up like that and walk away with it. And you'd go all through it and pick it all together and then cock the gun and squeeze the trigger, down it goes. I can tell you more about that later on.
Okay, yeah. So you like the Bren. Yeah. What other weapons were you interested in? I mean, rifle and the rest of you.
Rifle, naturally. The Sten gun we fired.
Now tell me about the Sten gun. What do you think of the Sten gun?
Well, it was all right at close range, but it was unpredictable because it used to jam a lot. And you could hold it and bang it on the ground and it would recoil and fire.
You were aware of that, were you?
Yeah, we were told, you know, don't drop your weapon when you've got the magazine on the gun.
Well, you know, were you warned you could trap your finger in it as well? I'm not sure which hand it is.
You can relate to that as well later on if you like.
All right, we'll keep that. So, did you realise how short range the Sten was accurate? Because it was very short range.
Well, when you went up against target practice, when you'd been firing on the range 500 yards, and down to 100 yards, and they took you on a Sten range, you were looking behind you to see if you could go back any further, you know, and they say, no, they've stayed still, because you think, well, this is quite close, you know, this bloke, if he's got a rifle and bayonet, could almost touch me, you know, but not very, very, a very primitive weapon.
Could you hit the target shooting from that range?
I have done, yeah, but I have known those that didn't. You know.
Any other weapons? So Bren, Sten.
I fired the officer's handgun.
The Webley
pistol.
Now, why were you doing that?
Someone was showing us. This was later on after training.
All right, we'll look at what else in training. Any sign of the hand grenade?
Hand grenades, yes.
Tell us about them, because they worry a lot of people.
They
Did they worry
a
you?
Lot of people, no, because I'd been talked about when I was in the cadets, not that I'd handled one, but was shown. The thing they worried about was when you put the detonator in, you had to squeeze it, and they always used to say it would go off in your hand if you hold it too long. But because you took the base plate out, we had to clean all of our grenades later on down the line, but we took the base plate out, put it down, you had a thing like that. This thing they used was the forerunner to the thing they nicked radios out of cars with, because they stick the two things in the twister. Well, you'd take the base plate out, and you'd take your charge and your cap, firing cap out, squeeze the two together, and you had two little channels. You put them in, you pushed them in, put the base plate in, tightened it up. When you used it, you pulled the pin out, and you held onto the clip for as long as you liked, but don't let go of it, and be there in 4 seconds later, because it would go up. So you pulled the pin out. Contrary to what they do on the American films, and pull it out. I tried that, nearly pulls your teeth out. So you pull it, arm stretch, and you threw the grenade.
Oh, now you're making an overarm gesture, yeah. Like bowling in cricket.
Yeah, over the top. No, none of this fancy Errol Flynn stuff, you know.
And you that was all right. You were all right.
Yeah,
with that.
I got on with that.
What about the bayonet? You would do bayonet training now. How did you do with that?
I did that with, I think the guys had a bayonet. I think when I became a trainee, we had pig sticking. We didn't have the curved bayonet. We had that for regimental drill. But we had a pig sticker.
Just a little short
point thing. But if I was fencing with you, you would have a stick with a circle on it.
Oh, so they did bayonet fencing then?
They did a wire ring. And I would, wherever you put the ring, I would have to lunge and hope that you weren't standing beside it or behind it. So that was the basic.
And were you taught to bring the butt through?
Eventually.
And what about the charging and sticking?
Parry, lunge, hook.
What about charging and putting...
Oh, I like that. You're shouting a lot at that, yeah.
They were still doing the shouting.
Sticking it in what they call it.
Why do you like it?
Straw. Well, it was just exciting, I suppose. Exciting. You got the upper hand when you were charging somebody.
Now, what about any other weapons? Piat? Or any other rocket?
I saw the Piat. I've never seen the Piat fired.
Any other weapons you can think
not
of? Light mortar?
Not in training.
Not
no.
In training. Right, that'll do for the training. Now, what about field craft? You've done a bit of that.
I've done that in the cadets.
Now, how much further did you go in the army with field craft and
tactics? We did a lot more of that training, not on your own, but with less groups, being sent out on a recce with perhaps an officer and an NCO and one person going out, sussing the land out, what was going on in front.
So patrol training?
Patrol
then?
Training, yeah.
And what was that like?
That was quite exciting.
In what way?
You never always knew what you were going to come up against. You knew where you were going and what you were actually looking for, but you would come up against all odd little incidentals in between, you know.
That had been arranged.
You might see another patrol coming your way who didn't know you were going that way, you know, and it would be either passwords or... cover and stay still and let them pass, you know, and getting near to enemy lines where there was an encampment of guns or something, and taking the numbers of guns and how many men there are guarding them, and taking that information back, which wouldn't be done as a company or a platoon, it would be more as a small recce patrol. I got picked to do a lot of those, but maybe because of being an ex-cadet, you know.
Any other field craft or tactical exercises?
No, not in training. I don't remember doing anything extra.
Anything else about your training? Any other sessions you'd have in training? Gas mask training or gas training?
I can't remember gas training, although I did a lot of gas mask training as a kid.
Tell us about that. I should have asked you before.
Tell me about...
When
we were evacuated, we had to take our gas mask with us, which we carried around over our shoulder, which was in a little box. And when there was a suspicion of a raid, a teacher in the class, if we weren't in under the desk or if we were in the shelter, would say, put your mask on. And we'd do train, you know, they would go out of the box, under the chin, over the top of the head. And, you know, some had Mickey Mouse things. And if you blew hard enough, it blew a raspberry.
And Did you?
I had a Mickey Mouse one, yeah. I don't know why they gave it to me, but... I used to blow raspberries. But my youngest brother was in a box.
A baby's box.
Baby's box. And I was given the job of pumping air into him because you had a pump that you pumped on it.
And what was it like wearing one of these things? Did they smell, or were they was it more difficult to breathe?
It was difficult to breathe, but it was like breathing through a pillar. It was very much more difficult to breathe. But unfortunately, we never had to use them for real. It was always mess about training.
Now, back to it. So any other training you do in the army that you can remember? In the basic training, I mean.
Well, apart from the drill.
So just lots of drill.
Drill, physical training, weapon training, field craft, runs, assault courses. That was basically the training.
Now, when you finish for the day, what would you do in the early evening?
After tea, you go run back to your billet, then you'd find out what your training program was tomorrow. So you'd get tomorrow's things ready, and then over to the NAFI for a...
Now, what did the canteen offer?
There was always a piano there, so there was always someone banging away at a piano. I used to play the harmonica, so I could always drum up a tune. I always carried them in my pocket. I had seven, I think, time I finished in the army.
For different keys?
I've got four now, yeah, different keys.
So you could play properly then?
Well, I played, but I always kept one in my pocket. So if we were out on the truck somewhere, going somewhere, and someone would say, play us a tune, Les, you know, or Higgins, whatever, or Dustbin, whatever they called me. And that I would just, you know, pack up my troubles and all these knees up Mother Brown. And they're just songs to keep people going, you know.
Now, in the canteen, was it a wet canteen for beer?
Had a bar, yeah, you had a bar, and you had you could buy with what little money you had. I think I was trying to work out, I was getting 15 shillings a week, I think. That was my weekly army pay.
And did you drink? I mean, I presume you'd started drinking at home.
But I did, but I didn't drink, funny enough. I've never been a drinker.
You didn't drink at all?
No. Might have drunk lemonade or something like that, you know.
Would you also have the tea and a bun? And I mean,
You could have a snack, you know, if you didn't have enough to eat. And you could have a bag of salt and pepper vinegar crisps, which was in a bag about that big then, you know, with a great big blue twist of salt in it, which you don't get now, you know.
Now, would you ever go out into Brentwood?
After your first 6 weeks training, no. After the next 4 weeks training, if you were deemed to be able to dress and walk correctly, you were allowed into the town.
And what would you do when you did?
Well, you could go to the pictures.
Is that what you do? Because you didn't drink. Was
no,
the pictures
I used to
your
go
thing?
To the pictures. And I lived at Ilford then, so unbeknownst to the barracks, I would jump on a train at Brentwood and get home to Ilford and try and get back before lights out the same night.
Just go and see your friends or see your parents?
I had a girlfriend then. I was courting at a very young age. But I used to go there and meet my friends, obviously, and then come back.
Did you take your army mates with you when you went back to Ilford?
Sometimes we went back together, two or three of us, four, five, six, you know, went back and had a look in Ilford Broadway and then back on the train and back up.
Now, how did you get on with the other recruits? You know, I mean, because were they all from the same sort of background as yourself? I mean, were they lads like yourself, or was there?
There was one or two dads were, I suppose, bankers or had reasonable, well-paid jobs then, I suppose. I mean, even if you were working on a railway engine or a guard, you were classed as a very well-situated person. We had them quite mixed. We got on one. We had a few boys come in from Suffolk and Norfolk, and in their training programs they found it a little bit difficult because of understanding what was being told them, you know, because of, I suppose it's, you could put it language, but dialect, you know, the dialects were different.
Because accents were much, people hadn't heard.
Yeah, I'd
there were different accents
never
there.
Never heard a country boy, only when I was in Devon, you know.
So, but there was no bullying then?
No. Well, I don't know. I wouldn't say bullying. There was one boy in our barrack room that was always getting put on Jenkins.
Ah, no, that's by the NCOs.
Yeah.
So tell us about that. What were the NCOs? How did the NCOs treat you? The instructors, really, aren't they?
Well, yeah? They're NCOs, the instructors, whatever you like to call them. If you responded to them and you did what they thought was your best, they were all right. But if you didn't, they would be on top of you all the time. But we had one guy that who was always being pulled up for not shaving, not washing his net ears behind his ears, not having the correct baths and showers. So our NCO one day said that he's dragging your platoon down, you know. Can't tell you what to do, but all I can say to you is he's very dirty. So we took him out in the yard with a garden broom, big garden broom, we scrubbed him and said, if you're ever pulled up for being dirty again, we'll do it again. And it turned him round. He became quite a good trainee. I mean, it was a wicked thing to do, but one bloke was spoiling it for the rest of us, you know.
Did you make any special pals? I mean, you know, people that you really thought of as friends, or were they just all like pals, you know, ordinary pals?
No, they were all the same. We'd never picked one on top of the other.
And the instructors didn't bully you at all, presumably.
No.
Do you see much of officers?
Off of training.
While you were training, yeah.
While we were training, there was always, we had a young lieutenant that was always on parade, on every parade. And then we had second lieutenants and captains who were company commanders and that. We were on parade, at particularly uniform parades.
Did they have much to do with your training, or were they just figureheads for you?
Well, you'd see them at training sessions, and now and again one would tell someone to stand up and he'd take a rifle off of them and show them one or two things to do, you know, and maybe show them how to put the hat on properly, or, you know, them how to get certain things.
So they did join in the training?
They joined in, but they didn't do training, if you follow what I mean.
So they'd help if they were passing?
Yeah, you'd never see them doing a run.
Did you
never see them on an assault course.
Did you respect them?
I did, because of previous training. I mean, I've always respected elders in that respect. You know, my grandparents and my parents, and anyone old. I mean, I'm 74 now, so I mean, I'm an older person myself. But I respect those people who are older than myself, and I think I respect them because of knowing what they did for us when we were younger. You know, it's a passed on thing which I don't think exists now.
What happened? Anything happened during your training? I mean, I presume I don't know how long it lasted for, but any other events that we haven't covered, you know, things that happened?
Well, in training, we did 6 weeks basic training, then we did 4 weeks continuation training.
Now, when would you do your pass out parade?
At the end of the 10th week.
And what was a passing out parade like?
Bullshit. It was the drill parade of all drill parades. That's what it became to. It was the actual drill parade of drill parades. And this is when you get your pat on your backs, or you're just an ordinary trained soldier, you know.
Now, was there a competitive approach between squads? I mean,
yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, you wanted to do, if the NCO come in and say, yeah, they've got 50 points today, we've got to do better than that. And you would try, and everyone would try in the squad to do their best, you know.
And why would you get points? What were they assessing you?
It was
you
all at the end of the training. You were assessed like A Company, 2,000 points, B Company, 1,756, C Company, less and so on.
But how would you get them? What would you get?
What you did, if you went on the range and you shot, shall we say, at... if you hit the target at 500 yards after running down 500 yards, you would get points allotted to your squad, to you personally, because you all had personal. I gained personal points myself.
And what did you get a prize from?
I got a best recruits medal.
From how many?
How many people? There was three training companies, about 300.
Now that's, I mean, that's quite a, an achievement.
A distinction, yeah.
I mean, was there any question of instant promotion? Because sometimes you get promoted for getting things like that.
This is just what led from the training. That's what I said. There was other things happening after training that did that. If you want to move, do you want
Let's move on. So you were awarded the best recruit. What happened there? And this is when, this is 10 weeks, so that would be February, would it?
Yeah. Was ordered that, I was given that, and we were dismissed off the parade to go home for a week, and then that would be, we were going elsewhere then. But I was called back off parade. I was told not to leave the barracks. Come back off parade, and my training sergeant, who incidentally was sergeant, who I've told you for before, he came up to me. He said, "Oh, I didn't want to call you back." He said, "But you're not having a week's leave. You're having 2 days. You're going to St. Bury St. Edmunds, Blenheim Camp." He said, "We're putting you on an NCO's course. 6 weeks." So I went home for two days and came back and was transported by army truck. I didn't have to go on the train with another two or three others. And we went up to Suffolk.
To Bury St. Edmunds. Which barracks? Do you remember the name?
I think it was Blenheim.
It was Blenheim. You said that. Sorry, I missed that. Yeah.
Blenheim barracks.
And this was an NCO cadre course, from the sound of it. And who was it there? I mean, because that's normally the Suffolk Regiment there, or was it?
Suffolk Regiment was doing training there, but there was NCOs doing NCOs cadre courses.
Now, so you got there in, still February?
Yeah.
And tell me about the course.
Well, it was about four times harder than the basic training.
Why? What was hard?
Because you had to do training. And you had to train your other NCOs who were also doing training. So, for instance, if you were demonstrating bayonet practice, for instance, you had to demonstrate it with another rookie like yourself and show him how it was done.
And so you were learning to be an instructor as well as the...
to be an instructor as well as a soldier.
And... So what? Take me through it. Was it just the same as we've just been? But
it was the same, but more rigorous because you were being. They would give you the Bren gun, for instance, and say, in a sack, you know, they say put that together, and you'd have to find all the bits and put it together. Then they'd blindfold you. Then they would hide this piece, and you would come to it, and you'd say, the bolts. Male bolts missing, and they would know that you were aware of what was going on.
Now,
which trainees in the basic training don't know. They don't no idea what goes where.
How did you do on how would you assess your progress on this?
Not bad. I was finding it again challenging, but I was finding that what I was teaching you as another guy, you were picking it up quite easily from me, you know, and guys at the end of the day who come up and said, how did you remember that? So, I've done it before and I just remember it. God, he said, you get another one come and say, you know that bit you were talking about? I nearly bloody well forgot it, you know. And it was just that my continuous training was from Army Cadets training camp and then into NCO's course.
And did you pass the course then?
Yeah, I became an acting Lance Corporal. On leaving.
Which is good. I mean, that's very early. Now, when did you leave there? I mean, you went there in February.
We did 6 weeks.
So into April, probably? Or to March?
February, March. It was the end of March.